Como mamá, siempre quiero lo mejor para mi familia. Por eso quiero lo mejor en mi cocina. Y eso significa solo huevos Eggland's Best. No importa cómo los cocines, siempre saben frescos y deliciosos. Y tienen más vitaminas D y E y el doble de omega 3 que los huevos regulares. Entonces, ¿por qué conformarte con menos cuando puedes tener lo mejor? Eggland's Best. Mejor sabor, mejor nutrición, mejores huevos.
Marlok Podcast tager dig med backstage.
Bandet, som er omdrejningspunkt i denne episode af My Rock Podcast, kom til verden i Kiti i Finland i 1996, da keyboardspilleren Tuomas Holopainen sammen med den nu tidligere forsanger Tarja Turunen satte sig for at erobre verden med symfonisk metal under navnet Nightwish. Det resulterede i debuten fra 1997 Angels Fall First, og siden da har tingene taget fart, og snart er Nightwish klar med, hvad der bliver deres 9. studiealbum, det første i 5 år. Og det er et noget specielt album, for ikke alene er det et dobbeltalbum, men det er også et album, der er delt op i 2 meget forskellige dele, nemlig en traditionel Nightwish-del og en del, hvor The London Session Orchestra med kor og orkester folder sig ud i et 35 minutter langt opus. Jeg har været en tur i Stockholm for at møde Tuomas Holopainen og bandets nuværende sanger, hollandske Floor Jansen, til en snak om det nye album, om turnéen, der blev udskudt på grund af corona, om inspirationskilder, og så får du også historien om, hvordan Nightwish var tæt på at havne i Sydneys berømte operahus. Jeg hedder Sten Skovgaard. Velkommen til.
We'll be right back. right. We are here in Stockholm with Tuomas and Floor of Nightwish. And I guess we'll get to talk about the new record. But we're on the end of a long promo day. You've done a lot of interviews. I guess you answered a lot of the same questions. So before I'll get you to the same questions, I would actually like to ask you, what would you like to talk about that you haven't already talked about today? Is something missing that we have to talk about?
Indian food and films.
Indian food and films. Wow. Is that a passion?
Actually, both are, yeah.
All right. Why?
Who doesn't like films? Everybody loves films, and yeah. Indian food is just, it happens to be our favorite cuisine.
It is.
How do I get on from Indian food and films? Well, film is actually, we can take that because film is one of the most important art forms, but films doesn't work if there's no music in them. So you have an album coming out in April. Two parts of the album. One is regular Nightwish, the Nightwish we know. And the second part is, most of it, instrumental. It could be a score for a movie. What was the purpose of doing this second part of the album?
It was the sort of song that was missing from the Nightwish back catalog. Doing that song filled a hole. And when you want to do a love letter to this beautiful planet, this felt like the only approach to take, to do a long, mostly instrumental orchestral symphony that just sails from one scenery to the other. And if you suddenly heard a human voice singing some lyrics, like she would suddenly go, "Oh, look at those beautiful mountains," it would definitely kill the momentum and the magic of the song. So that's why this approach, and I think it also creates a beautiful contrast to the first nine songs.
When you decided to make this a double album, because I guess it wasn't intended to be a double album in the first place, so, well, wasn't there a label guy saying, well, can you just cut one thing short and then fit it into a normal CD?
I was a bit nervous about that, but we never heard any criticism from the label. But the album is 83 minutes long and you can only fit 78 minutes to a CD, so it had to be split in half.
And it's the ninth studio album for Nightwish. Can you tell me, why was it important to do this instrumental part? Because I know you grew up on classical music, so I guess there is a lot of that inspiration for you, but I think it's pretty gutsy to go that way.
We've heard that pretty much, that what a brave thing to do a song like this. On the previous album, I heard people saying, you guys are so brave taking Richard Dawkins to the album, or you're so brave with starting an album with a song with Finnish lyrics. But the honest truth is that we really don't think about these things. You stand humble before the songs you want to do as a band and just try to find the best direction to bring that story alive and make the best, biggest possible impact to the listener without thinking about the consequences or without thinking if this is trendy or sexy or not.
Is that really the essential part of Nightwish, the DNA of the band, that you have to push the boundaries for everything you do?
Well, it's one thing that keeps the whole process really interesting for ourselves. We don't want to do the same album or even the song twice. You have to challenge yourself as a songwriter. I want to challenge my dear bandmates. I want them to challenge me. And throughout that, we hopefully challenge the listeners to listen to something that's interesting and new.
Mm. And this instrumental part of the new album, once again, you used the London Session Orchestra, Pip Williams as the arranger. Pulling even more classical music into the Nightwish universe, have this affected the way that the, should we say, the regular Nightwish will sound in the future?
No.
No. Very humble, no.
No, and it's not an instrumental, it's orchestral, because there's also a choir on it, and I sing on it. It's a suite of eight parts.
Suite, I like that word better than symphony or orchestral piece. But about setting trends for the future sound of the band, we just don't think about that kind of stuff. None of us has a clue what the future Nightwish is going to sound like.
Time will tell.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing. It's a matter of freedom and just being open for the future.
And Floor, how did you feel when Tuomas came up with the idea of doing this almost letting you out of the question as a lead vocalist?
I think if I would have a massive ego that says, how dare you write a 30-minute beautiful piece without including me on it, and why am I not singing, oh, the beautiful mountains? But fortunately, music is more important than my ego. There was nothing in me that thought, why are we not in this as a band? It felt for me, as for everybody else in this group, like a very natural progression. If there's any band that can just do this without making it look weird, it's Nightwish. And if anybody should write it, it's Tuomas. I'm just very, I'm very happy I did have a part on it, though. And again, not for my ego, but just because it was so fantastic to sing.
It is so beautiful. I just told Tuomas before you came that I grew up on classical music as well. And the first part, the Vista part, it made me tear up when I heard it. It was so beautiful. It was really, really beautiful. I don't know if it was the harp or the cello or the choir or whatever it was. I don't know.
But wonderful.
It was so beautiful.
It touched you.
I've written here that this part of the record is basically one track, all the works of nature which adorn the world. And of course, it makes the second part, the nature part of the human nature title for the album. Was this intended? Was it meaning all along that it would stand out as clear as it does?
It can mean whatever you want. That's the beauty of music and art. It's complete freedom, and you can apply your own story or interpretation into the thing. But one way of looking at it is that the first 9 songs on the album is the human part, and the last song is the nature part. Thus, the album title, Human Nature.
Mm. Well, let's go to the human part, because why is it the human part? Is it because it's stories told by a human? Is it because Floor sings it? Or why is it the human part?
I think originally it popped into my head because so many of the lyrics had the word human in it. And then I kind of took a step back from the songwriting process and realized that there might be a running theme going through all of these songs. And then it kind of occurred to me that, hold on, there's this orchestral piece coming about nature, and then we have these songs. There's a song about human imagination and its powers. There's a song about the power of human empathy. There's the song where humankind has to face the darkness of technology. There's this song about this human called Eugene Shoemaker. Okay, there's something connecting these songs. And then just a light bulb moment, human nature.
Let's stick with the technology song, because that's the first single of the record, Noise. And when I read the lyrics for that one, well, it's pretty clear. The Black Mirror, the cell phone. Is that personal? Is that you saying, well, I don't want to be stuck on this anymore?
No, could be that. And like Duomas also said, there are many interpretations possible. We're not really approaching this per se in a negative way, but not even smartphones. And then earlier today, there was somebody who very, very clearly stated it must be about cell phones, right? Yes or no, it's in there, and we show it, but it's more the behavior behind the use of it, the part where people not only use it, but get completely addicted to it and addicted to the world behind it that has no real content and is not really the real world, and where you might lose yourself in the fake and superficial. So it's way more in that direction. But in the end of the video, though, it's a very positive ending where you do see the real world. You see a beautiful sky lit up with the sun, which shows that the real world's still there, and it's even sunny.
On our sister station, The Voice, it's a youth station playing all the hit music. They have a program called FOMO, Fear of Missing Out. And it's actually about what you miss when you do stuff in the real world, what you miss online. This song, to me, at least, is actually the reverse FOMO, the fear of missing the real life.
Yeah.
Forl.
Yeah.
Forl.
It's not catchy.
It almost sounds Finnish.
Yeah, but I can remember... And that sounds pretty old, as I'm pushing 40, and I do consider myself young, but not young. The hunger you have when you're young, I understand you want to not miss out on anything. And I understand that technology there and the social media and everything provides, yeah, food for this hunger constantly. It's a positive thing, but not if you're afraid of missing out things only online or only in social media or only in the news. The constant flow of information, it's simply an unhealthy thing for humans. We need to sometimes not do things. We need to learn to not do things. But I understand the hunger, but it would be great if this wonderful technology could still invite people to take part in the real life and invite you to go to these places that you maybe see or read about. I mean, there is a constant flow of fantastic information about maybe, yeah, things that are not right next to you. Well, go there then. Be there. That would be a personal, perfect twist to the concept of not want to miss out on the real world.
Last week, I had a really fascinating conversation with a journalist when we were talking about these topics. And he said that he has a really good friend whom he met via internet, but he's never met her. But he called her a really good friend. And I just started to think that, is it possible to have a healthy, close relationship with another human being without ever having met her or him? I don't really have an answer to this. It made me think, because my instant reaction was like, no, you can't do that. You've never met him, you've never met her, and you call them your dear friends. But then it kind of made me think a bit deeper. You know, you have the Skype calls, you see the faces, you see the facial expressions, you know each other really well, you just have never touched each other or smelled each other, and I honestly don't know what to think about it. So it gave me food for thought, and I'm still pondering.
It might turn out to a song.
Yeah. You never know.
Never know.
Yeah. Just mind.
I don't know. What do you think? Because the instant reaction is no way.
Yeah.
Then again.
Yeah, indeed. Would you say if you've had the real conversations and you really feel like you've been opening up to this person and at least seen, even though digitally, facial and all those things, but yeah, it's an interesting concept of the brave new world.
That's when you get old. That's when you go like, you can't do that. The first time you say you can't do that, then you're old.
But he didn't.
No, I know.
He instantly realized, like, hang on a second. Yeah, it feels, but I haven't really given it a thought.
Yeah, I'm not judging at all. I just find it a very interesting subject.
Indeed. Let's go back to 2012, 2013, when you joined the band floor. At that point, you were the new voice of the band. Did you feel that as a pressure?
Yeah, of course. But the way I started maybe left me with no time to really contemplate too much about what people are going to think or all the expectations that came with it. I kind of started doing it and felt along the way how reactions were. But I was very fortunate with a very, very positive feedback. So that really eased the pressure. But of course, from that moment on forward, way more eyes are on you. That's exciting, but you can go online and read about it. But in the day-to-day life, you don't really, if you don't think about it too much, it's not really there. You just have to do the best you can and hope it's enough. I've always worked very hard to do good and be good in what I do. And yeah, that should do it. And if it doesn't, then I'm not suitable for the job. It's pretty easy, actually. And the rest are just very rich amounts of people's opinions. And they're all worth it. Worthy, but I can't read them all. I can't think about them all. I can only do what I think is best.
I actually remember talking to Tuomas at Copenhagen some years ago. And I can't remember what I asked you, but I can remember the answer. What you said was, well, I talked to my wife, and she said there can be no other singer in Nightwish than Floor.
Wow.
That was your words.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I've said it many times publicly that she is the third and the last singer in this band.
And that is that must be the mark that says, well, acknowledged. That was good enough.
Yes, definitely.
Let's talk a little bit about the vocalist part of Nightwish, because there are three vocalists in the band, Marco, Troy, and you, of course, being the lead vocalist. When you do songs, Tuomas, do you have the singer in mind, or does it just work out when you get together and play the songs for the first time?
I do hear the voices. There are distinctive voices in my head when I'm writing the songs and the vocal lines and the lyrics, for sure. The only time that I haven't had that in me was when we were doing the Dark Passion Play album, and we had no idea who was going to come and sing that. So the songs were made, and then we brought in Annette to sing those songs. But on every other album, I always think about the band, the way they play their instruments, and the way they sing when I write the songs.
Have you ever changed after writing a song, when you said, well, this could be a song for Marco, or this could be a song for Floor, and then actually changed it?
I don't think so.
I can't imagine even.
Oh.
No, if you listen to this album now, also the Human Nature, there are different tracks sang by different, by, it's not just me doing the leads. So then there's Troy singing Harvest. It's written for him, so obvious. It's a wordless thing, really, but I think everybody hears it can figure out why. And the same with Endlessness. I, even before knowing for sure, I felt that it was a song for Marco because it just feels that way. It fits so well. Yeah, I feel it maybe because, of course, I'm far from objective and I'm very far into knowing us, but it makes so much sense that I can't imagine that Harvest would have been written initially for Marco or for me. And it was like, yeah, hang on, maybe Troy can do it. It's just...
On this album, for sure, they were tailor-made for the singers. I was just thinking about the older albums a little bit. But
musically, of course, there's the classical inspiration, both on the regular Nightwish and of course, on the Nature part. But where else do you seek inspiration when writing?
This world is such an incredible place, filled with stories and stuff and mysteries and personal past, personal wishes for the future. It's a bottomless pit of inspiration. So it's usually not hard to come by. You just have to find the things that really inspire you and push you to write music.
And that was actually my next question, because it seems that this album being very diverse, and even though a very, very personal album.
Well, actually, I think it's probably one of our least personal albums in a way that it doesn't deal with issues like personal to me. Like, it's not pages out of my own personal diary. Like, back in the days, many of the songs would be about fantastical things, mythical things, and about my own personal heartache and hopes and dreams. But the last two albums, they have been more about universal themes, about things that interest us a lot and inspire all the band members. But like making a song about this entity called music descending on mankind, it's not a personal matter per se, if you know what I mean.
But what is your favorite track of the album?
Oh, just impossible to say. I don't like to choose personal favorites. It's easier to maybe mention like a personal part of the album, which is like the highlight, the personal climax. But to say which is your personal Nightwish favorite album or a song from that album, it's impossible.
Then I'll go to you, Flor. Your musical inspirations. Where do you? What are your singer icons?
I'm one of those people that don't really have that. But I get inspired by anything at the same time. So it could be that note in that song. I have a couple of people whom I think are just great, but I can't call them icons as in, oh, I want to be like that, because they only inspired me to become me, I guess, because I wanted to sound like me. See, ever since I was very young, but like Skin from Skunk and Nancy, Anneke van Giersberg from The Gathering in the Netherlands, those are voices that really inspired me. Russell Allen from Symphony X and Adrenaline Mob and all the stuff that he's been doing. Yeah, they really inspired me to do things, like search for things and develop. But it can even be a song from a completely different singer or of a band. Yeah, and sometimes more subconscious than conscious.
So basically, when you come out of the studio, you think, well, did I just sound like... Have you ever experienced that?
No. Also because I really never ambitioned it.
No.
To sound like anybody else, and that's maybe also because when I started to sing in metal bands and I really started to develop myself as a singer, there were not too many other bands that had female singers, and the ones that did sounded so profoundly different from me. Like, for instance, Daria in Nightwish back then, and Sharon then Adel from Within Temptation. I did not want to sound like them, but they could inspire me to try new things. Like, you know, in opposites, even those two, where Sharon has a very light voice. Can I do that? And Daria, the real opera stuff, like, can I imitate that? Can I make a sound like that and make it my own there and not just copy-paste the thing into me?
Well, that must be one of the things being great coming into a band like Nightwish, because one of the things that I found out, one of my favorite songs, I can say it because they're not mine, but Ghost Love Score is my favorite song, and you made it your own.
Yeah,
and that's that's one of the things that must be nice for one coming into a band, not being pushed over to, you have to do it this way.
No, definitely. It's great to have that freedom. But for me, I can approach a song, I try to at least listen to the essence of it, get a feeling of where it's about. Even though in the case of Ghost Love Score, I have no idea. Absolutely no. If I had to, in words, explain it, it's a subject I could not really tell you. But the emotion I feel even stronger, maybe because, yeah, I added my own. And from there, I can tell its story. And I really felt it. And it's fantastic to have the freedom to not only take it by the hand and make it my own. But, yeah, of course, I kind of changed the end a little bit. But that was a little bit, I was insecure in the beginning. Like, can I do something like that? Like, I guess I had it in my head and I asked if we could play it with a sound check. I have something like this. And, the Womas and the guys, they were really like, yeah, sure, just go with it. And from there, it grew to be where it became. And it's great to be able to do that, not because my ego desired to also make something. It happened that way, and it felt that it fits there. Yeah, and it's wonderful to see how it was so loved, or is loved, yeah.
My harvest will come, tiny vine. Just begun, something unsung awakens.
colors over crops and a child's face aglow before the sight.
Join the harvest of 100 fields, hearty and tame, all going back to one single grain. Offer light to the coming day, inspire a child.
Water the fields, surrender to the earth. Water the fields, surrender to the earth. Water the fields, surrender to the earth. They have beauty beyond the poetry, but choose a silent misery. The deeper the sea, the less remains. They'll find the pretty woods and tame flocks to herd. There's that sort of arousal of dare.
Join the harvest of 100 fields, hearty and tame, all going back to one single grain. Offer light to the coming day, inspire a child. Water the fields, surrender to the earth. Water the fields, surrender to the
Let's get back to the new album. Let's talk about the artwork for the album, done by Toxic Angel once again. I heard that you had to get help from an archaeologist to make the album. You have to explain that.
We just wanted to make sure that the symbols on the front cover are correct, because it would be utterly embarrassing if it was like a Chinese restaurant menu or something.
Yes.
The idea for the cover actually came from Toxic Angel. We did a couple of sketches with different ideas. I think it was the Vitruvian Man by Da Vinci and something else with human eye, and they were just awful. So he was actually the one who came up with the idea that how about trying to find the oldest known symbols for the words human and nature. And then since Troy's good friend David Roll is an archaeologist, sent him an email, could you please help us with this matter? And he then sent us those two symbols with explanations.
Have you checked?
Yeah, we have checked from many parts and they should be the ones.
Well, it's been 5 years since the last studio album. And in the meantime, you have been touring. And Tuomas, you made the first album with Auli. And Flora, you made the first album with Northward. So at what point did you feel, well, now it's time to do another Nightwish album?
For me, the moment was when we got the Auli album finished. Something snapped in my head at that point. I don't know if it had anything to do with the Auli album or if it was just a lucky timing, but I do remember the moment like, okay, now it's time for a new Nightwish. And that feeling hadn't been there for at least a couple of years, so it was a very welcome emotion.
And Flora, you also had a break from Nightwish during the Northward album. Was it nice to let things loose?
Well, of course, I wasn't part of the band so long yet. So for me personally, the break came pretty early, even though with full understanding of why it came. I did feel like, oh, I don't think I can not make music for an entire year. I did have the ambition to become a mother. Little did I know about how much work it is, and not just work. Of course, it's such a life-changing thing that I read about and I thought, yeah. I can do an album. I can do a guest vocals here, and I can do that live show. And sure, yeah, I can do a whole tour. I took upon myself maybe a little bit much, but that's a bit how I am. And Northward was a project that I had already written. The music was there, and I just felt that it would be such a shame to not release it. So already, as soon as we started to plan this break, I contacted Jørn Viggo Lofstad, a Norwegian fantastic guitar player and songwriter whom I wrote this album with, like, how about we finish it and release it? And so we did. So that was fantastic to do. I'm really, really happy that that music hit the world eventually, even though it had 10 years in between actually writing and recording it. Writing and recording and releasing it.
So the tour was the Decades tour, and you played all of the old stuff, things that weren't normally in the Nightwish set list. First question, how was it to play all the old stuff?
Well, I mean, I think for us both, it was a different experience, because for me, it was going back in a time, a huge part of the time where I wasn't in the band and where I was in After Forever, or I just got to know Nightwish, or I got to see one of their first tours, really early on, or we went on tour with Nightwish in 2002. So we were playing stuff that I saw the guys play, you know, every day for weeks on a row. So I think everybody had their personal memories to the time that those songs were, being released and being played. Yeah, for me, there was once again a huge challenge to make these old songs my own and sing them as I would, and in general for us to sound as the Nightwish of 2019 and not of back then, which I found very enjoyable, especially because we did so many harmonized vocals already back then, because instead of just like, I'm going to sing the lead, I'm going to re-record all the backings that we usually have, you know, as a nice layer for the live stuff. We can actually sing this live, and that was a lot of fun, I think, to build and do.
Bit of a watershed moment for me, hearing them do those vocal harmonies. I think the song was Come Cover Me, and when they did it the first time in the rehearsals, I was like, wow, that sounds really neat. Why haven't we taken that to its full potential yet? So at that point, I already knew that the next album would be filled with vocal harmonies. So that's the biggest thing that left its mark from that tour for the future of the band. Other than that, for me personally, it was good fun and a nostalgia trip.
And once again, pushing the boundaries, I guess. And when playing old stuff, I heard from a lot of other musicians saying, well, it's fun to play the old stuff, but also, well, we want to play new stuff. We want to get out and play all our new material. So did this playing all the old songs spark some creative flow?
Not per se, but the vocal harmony idea came from playing those old songs. I guess it comes down to the matter of whether the old stuff is good to begin with, if you want to play it or not. Same thing with the new stuff. I mean, it's the old cliche that you go to your favorite band and you want to hear them play the old stuff. But if the new stuff is really good, they will want to hear that as well, without forgetting the old stuff.
Yeah, that's it. A good balance. And that made the Decades tour unique, of course, because it was only old stuff, really. You can never play that many old songs if you have a new album in the making or you're on tour with that. So that was a really unique thing about the Decades tour. And now that it's done, it's really something to look forward to not do that and go back into the Here, the Now and this new Human Nature album to play.
I was wondering, because now we're talking about touring. Well, of course, you're going to play some of the songs from the new album, but will you go on tour with the whole album, or how are you going to do it?
No, just all the works. Yeah. And because it's quite a lot to take in. If we play it three times, I think we have a pretty good set and people really got it. It's, yeah. And then we just come and bow.
It started as a joke, but I'm really fancying the idea of doing it now.
There we go.
during the past 10 days, at least I've said it many times, and now when I think about it, it would be really cool, you know, a Nightwish show, and then the first song is 31 minutes of orchestral music without seeing the band. But it's still a Nightwish song, and then we would continue from there somehow.
Yeah, if there's still any audience left.
Well, I guess it depends on the venue.
Yeah.
If you choose the right venue, it might work.
Yeah, in proper surroundings at the proper point of the tour, maybe at some point in 10 years, a special show.
Actually played, you mean, that there are people playing it, not just, just you know, somebody puts play.
No. Actual orchestra with the choir.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And some great visuals. Yeah. Well, I can't see why it shouldn't work.
I like
maybe.
It.
Maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that'll be expensive. Putting a whole session orchestra on tour? Wow.
Yeah, but what if we're not touring? What if we just are in one place?
Yeah, just the Royal Albert Hall.
That's 100 shows there.
Yeah. Actually, I talked to the guys from Opeth a couple of months ago, and they were playing the Royal Danish, the Opera House, as the first ever metal band.
Nice.
Wonderful. Really
and they
nice.
And they so loud.
Yeah, I bet.
So why not?
It's happening. We were supposed to have a show in the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah.
Which got cancelled, unfortunately. But these venues are opening up for metal bands as well, which is brilliant.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm coming. I'll be there. And talking about touring, because you were actually supposed to start off the world tour in April in China, but the first shows got cancelled due to what everybody's talking about right now, the coronavirus.
Well, it's not cancelled, so that's really good news. It's postponed, so we give it another shot later on in October. Let's see where the coronavirus is landing. I find the information flow very double. On one hand, it feels like we really should panic, and on one hand, it's like it's a rough flu and anything there in the middle. And, you know, on one hand, you're supposed to cover your mouth, and the other website says it's completely useless. So don't, because then it's left for the people that actually use it and need it. We are obviously on this promotional trip where we are in different cities almost on a daily basis. We've seen all the big airports here in Europe, I think, by now.
And you're still here.
And we're here. Yeah. So let's at least not give in to fear. And I hope media can give us a good information flow of the actual thing happening, and they'll just feeding fear with, oh my God, now this happened, and now there's one more person sick. Because if you would really report on everybody who gets sick, then I think we would really get afraid. But you can't think like this. This is one virus of many that are, they're actually way more real lethal viruses. So it's a hard thing to really know what to say about. But I'm happy that we will go to China later on this year.
So you don't take any special precautions, just go as normal?
Yeah, I wash my hands a bit more often, especially if I am in public places on a daily basis, and I try to avoid touching my face all the time, which is really hard because it's such a normal thing to do. And that's also why they recommend you to do it. And that's the most sane thing to do. And other than that, I don't think about it too much.
Great. Well, I wish you the best of luck with the new album. I'm looking forward to seeing you on tour with the Session Orchestra and all good things.
Thank you very
Brilliant.
Much.
Brilliant. Thank you.
See you there.
Det var slut på denne episode af My Rock Podcast. Mit navn er Sten Skovgaard. Tusind tak, fordi du lyttede med. Og husk, at der er masser af episoder tilgængelige der, hvor du finder dine podcasts normalt. Og alternativt, så kan du også lige tjekke My Rock My Way med Mike Trainbud, eller vores nyeste podcast, Behind the Vinyl, hvor vi tager nogle af de klassiske albums under behandling. Og så er der selvfølgelig også en ny udgave af My Rock Podcast på onsdag, og der gælder det Dizzy Miss Lizzy.
My Rock Podcast.